You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The streak is over. Long live the streak. On that unfortunate note, welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790. The 17-game winning streak is no more. The Rockets go down 108-105 in Toronto on Friday night, snapping their win streak at 17 games. Rockets now fall to 51-14 on the year. Raptors improve to 48-17. Rockets do still stay three games in front of Toronto in the race for home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs. That's important because as the Raptors showed you on Friday night, they're certainly a team worthy of the NBA Finals hype they get, especially out of a weaker Eastern Conference. We'll have to see what happens when Golden State plays Portland later tonight. I'm recording this right after the game. Theoretically, if the Warriors win, they would go a half game up on the Rockets. But either way, even if they do, the Rockets, even if they're tied in the loss column, hold the tiebreaker. So for all intents and purposes, the Rockets control their destiny either way. And it's very possible Golden State loses that game to Portland, especially without Stephen Curry. We'll have to wait and see. But the Rockets, this was the only game the rest of the season that they were favored to lose, according to ESPN's Basketball Power Index. Toronto, as we mentioned, 48-17, very deserving of their record. In the third segment of this show, I'm going to expound on that a little bit more, why I think they're actually a little bit underrated in terms of just how viable they are as a long-term threat, not just to the Rockets, but the entire NBA. But for now, I want to start off by talking about the Rockets, which certainly it hurts to lose, but James Harden, boy, it wasn't for lack of trying by him. 40 points, a ridiculous 15 of 22 shooting, also 4 assists, 2 rebounds. Clint Capella, 13 points, 13 boards, but other than those two, a pretty underwhelming night across the board. Eric Gordon had 14 points off the bench, but 5 of 14. Chris Paul, 14 points on 5 of 13 shooting. By and large, the Rockets shot just 9 of 27 from 3, and of those 9 threes, 4 were from James Harden. The Rockets had just 5 threes from players not named James Harden the entire game. They were below their usual attempts. Credit to the Raptors for that. Certainly below their usual averages, even if the attempts are taken away. And even so, even with a Raptors team that got off to a 19-point lead, that got up to a big rebound advantage, ultimately still won it 42-36, but the Rockets closed the gap late. Despite all those advantages, Kyle Lowry playing out of his mind, 30 points on 10 of 14 shooting, including 7 of 9 threes. The Rockets had every right to call it a schedule loss, third game in 4 nights, all on the road, ton of long plane flights, all away from home, many far away from home in the case of Milwaukee and Toronto. The last two games, the Rockets kept pushing, got very close down the stretch of the game, ultimately could not make the final shot, did tie it briefly on a Harden three before an incredible shot by DeMar DeRozan to go back up a couple of points in the final 2 minutes. And the Raptors got a well-deserved win. I did think there was some subpar officiating in the final minute. Certainly, Clint Capella, when the Rockets were down 2, got the rebound with 40 seconds left. There was an over-the-back foul. And then after Chris Paul missed a three that would have given them the lead with 10 seconds left, there was a loose ball in which essentially every player on both teams seemed to foul each other by the technical standard, pushed each other, and it went on for several seconds. Eventually, there was a loose ball foul called on Chris Paul, which seemed a little ludicrous because it was no different of contact than anything else that went on. But ultimately, this was too good of a game, to blame on any one off call. The fact of the matter is, it's two elite teams going at it, and the Rockets, if there's anything you want to blame, you blame the hole you got yourself in the first place rather than a call, a whistle that could have gone either way in the final minute. A couple of those, as I said, with the Capella over the back and then the loose ball foul called on Chris Paul. Bottom line, I choose to look at it as a positive. As we said, this is the only game the rest of the year that the Rockets are underdogs going by BPI. The rest of the year, they have 17 games. 10 of them are home. They've had this marathon stretch on the road, this 8-game hell stretch, which we all knew coming off the All-Star break. They finished 7-1, and it would have been so easy for the Rockets to say, you know what, this isn't our night. They didn't do that, led by their best player. They got punched in the mouth, an incredible environment in Toronto. Would have been so easy to say, you know what, we've got an easier schedule upcoming. Dallas on Sunday. We can make up for it there. The Rockets didn't. They kept pushing back. It hurts that they didn't finish it. But by and large, I would say it should be a pretty proud night to be a Rockets fan. And no matter what happens in that Golden State-Portland game, remember, you are still in the driver's seat as the Houston Rockets for the best record in the NBA, home court throughout the playoffs versus Golden State, but also Toronto as well, because give them some credit. They played a phenomenal game tonight. They're an excellent team. They're a top five defense. They're a very good offense. And with all that being said, a crowd that was incredible, a defensive effort that was top-notch, Kyle Lowry shooting almost 80% on threes and having 30 points on 10 of 14 shooting. He averages 16 points on the year. And it still took one unfortunate late turnover from James Harden and a couple of controversial whistles to go their way in the final minute for them to sneak out with a one-possession win. That's how tough it is to beat the Rockets. Even without Ryan Anderson and Brandon Wright, even with the Rockets shooting just 27 threes, only making 9 of them, I think only the second time all year that they've made fewer than 10 threes in a game, single digits. Even with Chris Paul shooting below 40% from the field, even with almost no one outside of James Harden or Clint Capella giving you an above-average game, maybe you could say Ariza, 13 points, 5 of 10, but even Trevor was 0 of 3 from behind the arc. It was a subpar shooting game for the Rockets. Defensively, especially early on, you could see a lot of tired legs. I think in the second half, it was such an energized environment that the intensity picked up to where if there were tired legs, you just had a certain sense of euphoria, just the adrenaline from knowing that it's two of the top three teams in the NBA going right down to that to the wire in that incredible environment in Toronto. It picked up, but this is a third game in 4 nights for the Rockets. They've only had, I believe, 2 home games since the All-Star break. There were some tired legs early on. That played a big factor in the early struggles defensively. Got outscored 32-16 in the first quarter. Ultimately, in the second half, they limited a very active Toronto team to just 50 points. It would have been below 50 points if not for having to intentionally foul in the last 10 seconds of the game. The Rockets were active defensively. Harden was simply tremendous, making contested shot after contested shot. Now, I know you could say the same thing about Kyle Lowry. I'm sure if there's a Raptors fan listening, you'll say, okay, Lowry made 10 of 14, 7 of 9 threes. Well, James Harden made 15 of 22 and 4 of 8. Yeah, that's fine. You can say James Harden and Kyle Lowry equally overachieved. Well, which do you think is more likely to do that on a regular basis? I'd say it's probably the guy who's the MVP frontrunner of the league and only further established his reputation tonight in that capacity. Now, certainly you tip your cap to Kyle Lowry, but in terms of predictive value, that's why ultimately, as frustrating as it is, I take a lot more positives than I do negatives, because I think a lot of what went wrong for the Rockets digging that early deficit as much as 19 points came down to just tired legs and just the randomness, missing a lot of threes you normally make. Quite frankly, I see more positive in the fact that the Rockets responded as they did, never went away despite so many times the Rockets would push it close to 5 in the second half. The Raptors would push it closer to 9 or 10, and the Rockets always had an answer. Even after Kyle Lowry hit the 2 free throws, push it to 4 with 8 seconds left, you thought, okay, that's got to be about it. Well, no, Eric Gordon makes a 3 in literally 1 second, which ends up giving the Rockets one final chance. But with 5 seconds left and the threat of the Raptors fouling, the best the Rockets could get was a look from James Harden from 30 to 35 feet, which was just off to the left. I wouldn't call it a schedule loss, but I would say certainly that's a part of it between the road games and Toronto just being a really, really good basketball team. Again, we'll talk about that in segment 3. I have a hard time being too down on that. No matter what happens with the Warriors game, hopefully they lose to the Blazers. If they don't, folks, it's still within the Rockets' control, and you play Dallas on Sunday, a team that if you have the same level of effort, you should beat by 15 or 20-plus points, even in Dallas. So rather than dwell on what went wrong, I think you tip your cap to Toronto. It's a very good team, and despite the Rockets having everything in the world against them, it still went into the final seconds and took Kyle Lowry playing out of his mind to get a 3-point win in that environment. That's how good the Rockets are. That's how tough it was to break the 17-game win streak. And even though Toronto is really good, they deserve all the credit in the world, ultimately get to the NBA Finals between these two teams. Could Toronto make it a series? Sure, they could, but what, in my opinion, is the difference between these two teams, the A game of James Harden and Chris Paul, now Chris Paul did not show it tonight, but he's done it enough this season, the A game of James Harden and Chris Paul is just a little bit higher on a consistent basis than Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, to the point where even spotting the Raptors a 19-point lead with the schedule factors, the tired legs, the lethargic defense early on, whatever you want to call it, the Rockets still thoroughly outplayed the Raptors in the second half of this game, had a great chance down the stretch. Ultimately, the Raptors made just enough plays to survive, but the Rockets, other than the fact that any loss hurts when you're competing with the Warriors, arguably the most talented team in the history of the NBA, other than that, I have a tough time being overly down on that. The Rockets showed a lot tonight, and even with the loss, keep in mind, they've now won 17 of their last 18 games, and they are 51-14 on the year, and are in complete control of their own destiny, regardless of what happens with the Warriors over the next few hours for home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs. Now, I wanted to start off discussing the positives, because certainly James Harden, 40 points, 15 of 22 shooting, Clint Capella, a double-double despite going up in the middle against Valanciunas. There was a lot of positives to look at tonight. Yet, as we said a few times, the difference in this game was the 19-point hole that the Rockets dug themselves. The defense in the early going was substandard, but I think a lot of it was just the tired legs, the schedule, all the road games adding up of late. There are two things that I think really stood out in terms of what the Rockets were missing tonight. One, Ryan Anderson. As we mentioned, the Rockets were out-rebounded 42-36. There are some matchups, not all, but some, to where Ryan Anderson's shooting is very important. Toronto is a very large team. This is one where you need a consistent outside shooter to pull them out of those bigger lineups. If not, they've got more length than you. That's just the reality. You need something to shoot them out of it, and Ryan Anderson would have been the perfect ticket for that tonight. Now, of course, he needs to shoot on a more consistent basis. The good news, before he went out, we did see Ryan's shooting percentage since mid-January start to trend the right direction. Unfortunately, the hip injury is what it is. We'll have to get a better timetable, I think, once they get back to Texas, Dallas on Sunday, Houston on Monday against San Antonio to see exactly where Ryan is at. Not saying Ryan is an essential piece, but for this matchup, I think he is. Toronto, in my opinion, is the quintessential big team in terms of the first three quarters. As I said, the Rockets closed the rebounding gap late, but even with closing the gap late, Toronto won it 42-36. I thought you needed more shooting to space them out. And without Ryan Anderson, you didn't have the shooters. That's not that P.J. Tucker doesn't have any ability to shoot threes, but he certainly doesn't strike fear in opponents' hearts the same way that Ryan Anderson does. P.J. tonight just 3 points and missed both of his threes. Also, Brandon Wright. Nene in the first half played just 4 minutes, was a minus six in those, no points, 0 of 3 from the field. Raptors far too quick for Nene. This was a quintessential Brandon Wright game in terms of calling for a more athletic option behind Clint Capella, and unfortunately Brandon still out another couple of weeks in minimum with his knee issue. This is why you brought him in, and it sucks he's out injured, but I thought both Ryan and Brandon would have been very useful tools tonight, especially late in the first, early in the second quarters when the Raptors got a ton of separation, and unfortunately Mike D'Antoni did not have them at his disposal. The other thing that should be discussed, Joe Johnson. 5 points, did make 2 of 3 from the field, 1 of 2 from behind the arc in his 16 minutes, but was a minus 4. In the fourth quarter, Van Fleet just abused him. And what I'll go back to with Joe, I'm not as down on Joe as a lot of people are on Rockets Twitter. I see the tweets, but I think ultimately Joe gives you more dimensions than Gerald Green does. I think we saw in one key stretch in the first half, he made a three, then created his own shot out of an isolation. He's a better passer. He's a better isolation player. I think some of the shots he's missed, now again, he did make 2 of 3 tonight. I think some of the shots he's missed were pure randomness. His last 20 games in Toronto, his last 20 games in Utah before he went to the Rockets, he shot 45% from the field, nearly 37% from three. I know he shot below that his first few games in Houston. I think that's largely sample size related. What I will agree with you guys on, and I would go back to the podcast I had with David Locke right after the trade, it was a buyout acquisition, it felt like a trade. But I talked with David Locke, who of course the Jazz play-by-play broadcaster has watched Joe the last 2 years in Utah, and he said at this stage of Joe's career, at 36, he is a small ball four only. That is his role. Tonight, there was entirely too much ask of him to be a swingman. Asking him in the fourth quarter when the Rockets at one point cut it to 4 and the Raptors, one of their several mini runs to push it back to 10, and ultimately those add up because the pressure they put on you, they were asking him to guard Fred VanVleet, and it did not go well. Joe Johnson at 36 years old just cannot move side to side against a guard that well. If you want to ask Joe to be your small ball four, that's fine. If you're asking Joe to guard perimeter players, that's too much. I'm fine with Joe over Gerald, especially if it's in lieu of Ryan Anderson. Either Ryan is out injured or if Ryan's ineffective. If you want it, I guess my view on Joe Johnson, don't ask him to do anything that you wouldn't ask Ryan Anderson to do. And I know there are switches. I know there are some things that happen from time to time in a game. But you know what? If Ryan Anderson gets switched on to Fred VanVleet, there's probably going to be help sent there because they know that Ryan Anderson is that capable of moving laterally well enough to keep a very quick guard from penetrating to the rim and collapsing the defense. It's not just a matter of where they're playing. That's part of it. Certainly, I don't think you can play Joe at the wings, but it's also the Rockets, the coaching staff, the players on the court. You have to look at Joe, in my opinion, the same way you look at Ryan. And maybe he's a little more athletic, especially offensively. Maybe he's a little more than the catch-and-shoot guy. But defensively, the same limitations are there. He's a small ball four, and you just cannot have the defensive limitations of a 36-year-old Joe Johnson. Really, it's no different than what Ryan Anderson gives you. We know Ryan's much younger, but of course his athletic limitations, we know what they are at this point in his career. And that, to me, it's a little thing, but in the fourth quarter, when the rest of the Rockets really seem to kind of raise their intensity level, the few easy buckets Toronto got, it felt like because they were taking advantage of Joe Johnson. And again, I'm not saying that you can never switch, but folks, if you got Ryan Anderson switch onto Fred VanVleet, I'm pretty sure you would see the Rockets rushing to do something about it. They didn't with Joe Johnson, and part of it's the coaching, part of it's the players on the floor, but you've got to treat Joe the same way you do Ryan. I don't see Joe versus Gerald Green as necessarily the problem, because I don't even see Joe and Gerald as playing the same positions optimally. Joe is about giving you what Ryan gives you when either Ryan's out injured or if it's a matchup that's maybe not favorable for him or maybe Ryan goes in the tank shooting the way he did earlier this year. I don't necessarily think you want a perimeter player in Gerald playing those minutes that Joe played tonight. I think it's that you need more awareness, and I don't know, maybe this is ultimately irrelevant because Ryan comes back and it's probably Ryan playing those minutes instead of Joe. But in my opinion, it's less about Joe versus Gerald tonight and more about being aware of exactly what Joe is, what role he is filling, and then adjusting from there. Because in my opinion, I have a tough time getting up in arms about the lack of defense from a 36-year-old who's picking up a young guard. I'm more upset with the role that he was put in and the lack of adjustments to essentially what was the same scenario as putting Ryan Anderson on a switch and being left on an island against one of the quicker, better young guards in the league, especially off the bench from a penetrating perspective. Now, aside from that, I thought the defense, honestly, was pretty good in the second half. I thought the intensity picked up. This was another quality game for Capella in terms of playing one of the league's better bigs. Actually out-rebounded Valanciunas 13-10, despite Valanciunas playing more minutes, 28-26. Finished well inside, 13 points, 6-11 from the field. Had a big strip and score. I can't believe remember if it was late in the second quarter or the third, but I thought Clint was very tough inside. I thought PJ and Luke gave you quality minutes. Chris Paul had three steals. Trevor Ariza had two steals. James Harden had a big one. Luke Bamute had a huge block, actually covering for Joe on one of the situations where Joe was left on an island. It didn't matter because Luke recovered so well to make up for it. Even Eric Gordon had a block, and Eric, despite seemingly struggling to throw it in the ocean after the first quarter of the game, which he missed his first three-pointers, didn't seem close, actually finished 3 of 7 from behind the arc, including the big one I talked about earlier in the final 10 seconds. Despite the Rockets largely being outplayed by Toronto's bench, which is one of the best units in the NBA, Eric was just plus zero, essentially a neutral plus-minus, and that speaks to how well he played. They trusted him down the stretch of the game. That was a situation I discussed the other night in which Eric is so good, especially with his spacing. You're going to have him out there late in game, especially if you need offense. He was out there tonight. He delivered with a couple of big shots late in the game. I find it hard to really critique the Rockets down the stretch. The effort was there. They wanted it. Just in my opinion, I thought early on it was sluggish. And then aside from what happened early on, the biggest factors, in my opinion, were Nene being just completely useless, not even being able to play a center in the minutes without Clint Capella, And then Joe Johnson in the second half, the few minutes that the Raptors won down the stretch, they took advantage of Joe Johnson. And those are issues that, while small, at the same time, the Raptors are a good enough team that even if the margins are small, if you give them even a crack, give them that type of opening plus the early lead that they got, and it's enough to escape with a win by 3 points, especially in front of that awesome home crowd in Toronto. So this will do it as far as our game analysis from tonight. For the final segment of the show, as promised earlier, I want to discuss not just the game tonight, but bigger picture, why I think this is such a fascinating matchup, the Rockets and Toronto, why I think Toronto, bigger picture, is deserving of a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt than I think they've gotten to this point, not just within the Rockets Twitter community, but also within the NBA community as well. Certainly, it was a very hard-fought, well-earned win for the Raptors tonight, 47-17 on the year. So in just a few moments, I'm going to bring you the third segment of tonight's show, basically extolling the virtues of why I think the Raptors are, in fact, very legitimate, and also why they might have a little more in common with your Rockets than you might think at first glance. Now, for the third and final segment of this show, I want to turn things bigger picture, because for the Rockets and Raptors, two teams that have been leading the Western and Eastern Conference for quite some time now, at the end of the day, this is one game out of 82. Both squads have much bigger goals in mind when they could conceivably meet again in a best-of-seven series in the NBA Finals in June. And for those of us in Houston, we've spent a lot of this year poking holes in the conventional narratives with the Rockets. Specifically, what I've argued repeatedly on this show is the stigma out there about the Rockets being playoff chokers, and James Harden in particular, it doesn't mesh with the results, because when you look at the Rockets over the course of the James Harden era, what you have gotten in the regular season has translated very closely to what their postseason performance has been. It's not a choke if you lose to a team that's just simply better than you, which was the case when they lost to a 61-win Spurs team last year that outplayed them by six games over 82 in the regular season. The only time the Rockets have not played to seed in the James Harden era, number one, it was 4 years ago against the Portland Trailblazers in the 2014 playoffs. And secondly, that was a Blazers team that went 54-28, the exact same record as the Rockets over 82. The Rockets just happened to have the tiebreaker. And even in that series, if not for Damian Lillard's miracle with 0.9 left, it's going back to Houston for Game 7, in which the Rockets would have been pretty substantial favorites and probably move on. So I don't like the characterization of the Rockets, and especially James Harden, as underachieving, that somehow their regular season success should be devalued because once you get to the playoffs, there's going to be something different that happens. Because the reality, that's not. What happens in a lot of these situations, these days, anger sells, outrage sells. The Stephen A. Smiths, the Skip Baylesses of the world, which unfairly, but the reality is, they do kind of set the narratives in motion, saying one team just isn't as good as the other, it doesn't sell. When you look at the teams the Rockets have lost to in recent years in the playoffs, last year's Spurs, certainly the Warriors, the 2 years before that, reality in all those situations, the better team won. That narrative doesn't sell because, folks, how do you get clicks that way? The way these people get clicks is to come up with some sort of sexy storyline. Somebody choked. Just saying the Rockets or any team out there isn't as good, many times that's not the sexy storyline, but it's the truth. And there's no shame there shouldn't be in being somewhere in the second to fifth best team in the NBA, but just not quite as good as the best team, or maybe the second best team in the case of the Spurs last year and the Rockets. In many cases, the team that loses a playoff series didn't lose because there was something fundamentally wrong about them, or that they choked, or that there's some sort of mental hurdle they can't get over. Many times, especially in this star-laden era of the current NBA, in which you have the super team of the Warriors, then whoever LeBron's with in the Eastern Conference, first Miami, now Cleveland, many times, it's not that there's anything wrong with you. There are a lot of perfectly good teams. You're just not quite as good as the best one. And the proper way to respond to it is to keep everything in context, try and make your team better in the offseason, and kudos to the Rockets and Daryl Morey, that's exactly what they did, first going out and getting Chris Paul, and then fortifying the depth behind Chris Paul with guys like Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, then the in-season additions, guys like Joe Johnson, Brandon Wright, Gerald Green. We could go on and on. Unfortunately for the Rockets, the narrative is still out there, and I know it's never going to be fully gone until they beat the Warriors, as unfair as that expectation may be. That's still going to be around them until James Harden hoists the trophy. But even if he doesn't, folks, it's really hard to be the best team out of 30 in any given year, especially in this day and age of the Warriors and whatever team LeBron is with. It doesn't mean that something is fundamentally wrong with you necessarily if you don't. And even if the hot takes are still going to be out there, we can keep it real here on Locked On Rockets. I've told you guys this in the past. The reason I'm bringing it up tonight, in my opinion, a lot of the same faulty logic that gets thrown around the Rockets in the Western Conference can be applied to the Toronto Raptors in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot of talk out there about the Raptors not taking them seriously based on prior playoff failures, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. Their shortcomings statistically and especially as a team have been well documented. I'm not trying to tell you they don't exist, but on this occasion in which you see the Rockets playing the Raptors, all these headlines, potential NBA Finals preview, I want to remind people just how viable this team is and why I think a lot of the same principles that apply to the Rockets, they apply to Toronto as well. First off, entering tonight, it's not the Warriors that were second to the Rockets in the NBA in point differential. It's the Raptors who entered plus 8.6. Every metric shows they are really, really good. They have 17 losses, or had entering tonight, compared to 13 and 14 for the Rockets and Warriors, respectively. This is a really, really good team. And yet, I'm sure there are some folks listening that are going to hear that and say, well, I felt like this in the past, but they always let me down. They always choke. And my response to that, just the same way I would argue on behalf of the Rockets, have they really? First off, the last 2 years, the Raptors won 51 games last year, 56 games the year before that. The year before they won 56, they actually got to the Eastern Conference Finals and then took two games from the eventual NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers. The Warriors took three, pushed the Cavs to game seven before LeBron won it in Oakland in that storied game. Well, the Raptors took two the prior round. Those Raptors getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, losing 4-2 to the eventual NBA champions, is that particularly bad? Last year, they got out of the first round. They lost in the second round, again, to LeBron James and a Cleveland team that was simply better. So 2 years in a row, 56-51 wins. They get out of the first round both times, won a combined three playoff series. Both losses to the eventual Eastern Conference champion Cavs and LeBron James, one to the eventual NBA champion. And that's the closest parallels to this year's Toronto Raptors. Now, you go back a couple of years before that. Yes, they lost in the first round. First to the Nets, that was back in 2014, and then to the Wizards. The 2015 Wizards, they got swept. I'll admit it. That's the one black eye that's out there. The other 3 years, I don't really see what's that bad. To go back to that 2014 series, they lost to the Nets. First off, they lost in Game 7. It was a 7-game series. It was extremely competitive. Secondly, that Toronto team, they won 49 games. And for that matter, the next year they lost to the Wizards, they won 48. So it's not like these are juggernauts. These are teams that didn't even win 50 games in a weak Eastern Conference and in a weak division. They were simply a decent regular season team who, and in the case of the Brooklyn series, you can get on them a little bit for the Washington one in 2015. I said that's the one black eye that I think is legitimate when they just didn't show up. But as far as that Nets series, the Nets were nearly as good in the regular season. And then in the playoffs, that was a Nets team that was kind of the last stand for, well, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, but Joe Johnson, Deron Williams, a lot of proud veterans. And it was the first time that version of the Raptors, or this version, I should say, led by Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, got to the postseason. I don't think it's a big surprise to see guys like Joe Johnson, Paul Pierce, Deron Williams making big plays in the playoffs against a first-time Raptors team, and the Nets winning that series in 7 games against a Raptors team that didn't even win 50 games in the regular season. I don't see that as some huge shock or some failure. I think it's a swing series that could have gone either way, and the Nets and their veterans got it done. Kudos to them. This is not the 2007 Dallas Mavericks who won 67 games and then lost in the first round to the 8th-seeded Warriors led by Baron Davis. None of these are. in most situations, especially the last two, which is the closest to the current version of the Raptors, they just lost to a better team in the Cleveland Cavaliers, led by LeBron James. And yes, I'm aware of some of the numbers that are out there regarding Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. What I would ask is perspective. First things first, nearly everyone has lower playoff numbers when you look at efficiency than they do the regular season. You're playing better teams on a regular basis. Everyone is rested. There are no back-to-backs. So the scenarios in the regular season where everyone kind of has these games where you occasionally shoot 60, 70%, get to boost your numbers, they're not there in the playoffs. So many times you see when fans or especially media want to present a case against a certain star player, they'll post his regular season numbers then next to his playoff numbers. And it's a very misleading comparison because you're showing it out of context. Because nearly every star that you can point to has some decrease in efficiency from regular season to the playoffs. That's just the way it is. You're playing much better defenses, much better teams, much more rested opponents on a more frequent basis. So a lot of this gets pulled out of context. Secondly, if you are playing an opponent that is better than you, which certainly the Cleveland Cavaliers were the last 2 years, if you are playing from behind in most of your games, you are going to have to be more aggressive. And when you are more aggressive, when your team is losing and you have to shoot more, you know what's going to happen? You're going to take more shots and you're going to miss more because you're not working in the flow of your offense. The team is looking to whoever your stars are, in this case Lowry and DeRozan, and saying, bail us out. So they're shooting more and while they're missing more because it's not within the flow of the offense, they're having to play hero ball. That happens to pretty much everyone when you're losing in a series. And I'm not saying the numbers are invalid. What I'm saying is that you need to remember the context. And the context for most of these is that the Cleveland Cavaliers, they were a better team in the regular season, and they were certainly a better team with LeBron James and that group dialed in and focused in the playoffs. And a lot of the problems the Raptors have had, they were not just playoff problems, they were there in the regular season as well. That's why they only won 51 games last year. That's why the first years they only won 48 and 49. This was not some juggernaut that turned into something different in the playoffs. So when you're talking about the 2018 Toronto Raptors, just like when you're talking about the 2018 Houston Rockets, their record in the regular season, there's no reason to expect dramatically different results when they get to the playoffs because you have not seen a Toronto Raptors team this good over 82 games, just like you have not seen a Houston Rockets team this good over 82. And I feel it's important to discuss this tonight because, yeah, the Raptors are a very quality opponent. I think everyone felt that way going in, at least about the regular season Raptors, but I see a lot of talk on Rockets Twitter about how the Rockets Warriors, that's the finals, and if you get past that, you're home free. Well, I wouldn't say that. The top of the Eastern Conference is better than it's been in recent years. We'll have to see what the Cavaliers can do, whether LeBron makes one last stand, but even if he's not able to, we saw how good the Celtics were last Saturday night. Tonight, these Raptors, what we have seen from them over the regular season to this point, they're legitimate. They are a very good team, and I think it's very possible that the Rockets play them in the finals in June if the Rockets are fortunate enough to get past the Warriors, and if they do, I think it could be a pretty compelling series. So, again, I know this is bigger picture, but I thought tonight Rockets-Raptors was appropriate point to get to it because both teams, to some degree, as big as the game was, there's a little bit of a cloud hanging over both franchises, at least amongst NBA Twitter, based on, well, what's going to happen when they get to the playoffs? And in my opinion, just as it's largely undeserved for the Rockets, I think it's largely undeserved for Toronto as well. Now, all that said, even with the fact that I think a lot of the Raptors' playoff narrative being overblown, as far as them being chokers or whatever the Stephen A. Smiths of the world would like to have you believe, even with the result of tonight's game, I still think the Rockets would beat the Raptors in a seven-game series. I think what we saw down the stretch tonight, the Rockets led by James Harden and Chris Paul, ultimately the A game of their stars on a regular basis is just a touch higher than Lowry and DeRozan. And ultimately that's why in a best of seven, I think the Rockets would beat this team. Ultimately, this was one game, and it was one game the Rockets were on a 3 out of 4 stretch. I know the Raptors were as well, but the Raptors were playing at home in front of just a ridiculously awesome group of fans, and that makes all the difference in the world, especially early in the game, in terms of the level of effort that you often expend. Big picture, I think the Rockets, their stars have a little bit higher A game, and I think the advantage of the Raptors' bench gets mitigated a little bit by the tighter rotations of the playoffs, which are enabled by more time between games, so on and so forth. But the point is, we might be talking small margins here and there that I think would tip it to the Rockets over 7 games. By and large, the Raptors you've seen to this point, they're who you're going to see in the playoffs. They are very legitimate. I think they're going to win the Eastern Conference. And in my opinion, if the Rockets win the West, and they're still in position for home court advantage throughout the West, regardless what happens in this Warriors game tonight, then I think the Raptors are highly likely to be who you're waiting on, or who's waiting on you, excuse me, in the NBA Finals. Because the Celtics and the Cavaliers, quality teams, and I know never count out LeBron, but to this point in the year, the Raptors are just better. So on that note, I will end things, because I don't want to make this too much about what the Rockets didn't do. The Raptors deserve a lot of credit, so kudos to them. Tip your hat, move on, and try and make up for it on Sunday against the Dallas Mavericks. Until then, I will wrap up. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners here at Locked On Rockets, for listening. If you want any more content from us, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, we have a Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. We have a website, LockedOnRockets.com. And we also have an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, where you can ask us questions, make suggestions for the show. As we said, reach out about the team and ask us questions. You want to know what Mike D'Antoni is thinking, as many of you do, playing Joe Johnson over Gerald Green, that kind of stuff. Please do not hesitate to reach out. We want to be there for you as your daily source for covering this basketball team. Until Sunday, when the Rockets are back in action, I will sign off here. Remember, if you're not already following and subscribing to us, wherever you listen to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, please do. But yeah, until Sunday, we'll be on hiatus. So yeah, have a good weekend, folks. Take some time to be with your friends. And then Sunday night, we'll be back as the Rockets take on the always rival Dallas Mavericks. I don't care what their rival is. They are always going to be rivals to me, and I think most of us here in Houston. So the Rockets hopefully should be able to get back on the winning track against a Mavs team that seems to be in full-on take mode on Sunday evening. So until then, the unhappy final Friday night, Raptors 108, Rockets 105. Rockets fall to 51-14 on the year, still number one in the Western Conference as we're recording, and regardless what happens to the Warriors, they'll be in control of their own destiny for the number one spot and home court throughout the playoffs. So I would say move on from this one quickly. You can lick your wounds if you want, but this was a game effort by a Rockets squad who clearly wanted it. Just tip your hats to Toronto, a team that is very good, and especially playing in their own gym. They played very well, and ultimately, especially over 82 games, you're going to run into one of these from time to time. Fortunately, the Rockets had won 17 in a row before this, so certainly built up a little bit of a buffer in terms of being able to withstand the impact. So folks, have a good weekend as best you can after this Rockets loss. And again, let's talk again on Sunday night when the Rockets take on the Mavs and have a much better shot to get back in the win column and on the right track. Until then, folks, have a good one. And thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.